Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Large news today in Minneapolis, where the city council this morning, by an 11-0 vote, approved a sweeping plan to reform policing. Now that the vote has taken place, the public will be able to read the 144-page settlement agreement. This all came about because of last year when the Minnesota Human Rights Commissioner, Rebecca Lucero, it was in April, said Minnesota's largest police agency stopped, searched, arrested, used force, and killed people of color, especially black people, at starkly higher rates than white people during a 10-year period. And Brian O'Hara, the police chief of Minneapolis, is on to join us here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. He is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Brian, good to talk to you again. If someone is listening right now and they are a person of color listening in the city of Minneapolis, and they've been around for a while, they're in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and they feel like they've been targeted more often than they want to share. But they also want crime to be enforced, right? They're not trying to be soft on that. And they've heard about changes before. Why should they feel like these changes are really going to alter how they are treated moving forward?
Yes, Chad, thank you. Well, I think it's absolutely true that those folks in our community that have been most affected by policing itself and police enforcement are also those who are most vulnerable to serious street crime and gun violence, and often those who, you know, are afraid to allow their kid to walk to the store. So I think addressing both the issues around safety and addressing both the issues around police reform and building trust in the police department are one and the same, trying to achieve ultimately the same goal that everybody has here, to just simply have good policing. And I know people have heard this before historically around policing in cities around the country, but I think what is different in this type of process is that we actually have a very lengthy court enforceable document. And I'm not saying that, you know, bringing about the culture change that we need to actually change how policing is experienced on the street isn't of itself the end all be all of this type of agreement. But what happens when you have this is the city is forced to make certain investments in police department to ensure that we get things right. And then we have to prove it to an independent evaluator before the court. Otherwise, we will not be in compliance with the terms of the agreement, and the city could go on indefinitely in this situation. So I think what this brings about is it brings about a mandate by a court, and one where we will have to demonstrate that all of our officers are performing policing to the way that the community expects all of the time.
Okay, I want you to expand on that, because I've read about this, about what you're going to have to prove and show. You talked about it a little bit in the answer, but let's amplify this. For the audience who hears that for the first time, try to be as specific as possible. When you're now in charge of this department, what will you have to show, and who will be regulating this to see if you're living up to this agreement?
Yes. So, for example, I think, you know, a number of reforms and policy revisions have happened in this city. especially over the last 3 years. And I think if you talk to a lot of the cops, I think they would tell you, hey, look, you know, a lot of our policies have been revised so many times and they've just become so long that they don't feel comfortable enough to actually understand what some of that even means, what some of these changes mean. And what happens in this process is we have to have both community involvement and we have to have input from the cops, as well as the state MDHR and the city attorney's office to ensure that we're revising policies so that they're as clear as possible. But we're not just going to email them out to the police department, as had been done in the past. We're going to have to spend some serious hours providing real training to the cops. And I think that's what they want. They want to know that there's some support and some direction so that they know what we have to do going forward. And that's what this agreement mandates. It mandates that we provide numerous hours of adult-based learning and scenario-based training in facilities that are appropriate to provide that level of training. Because the reality is our cops are put out here every single day, put into situations that are incredibly difficult to figure out, and they just simply want and need the right direction, the right training, so that they can respond on a level that community expects.
Okay, so let me stay with the police. And you talked about the training, you talked about the information. You know this better than me. You live this every day. You need more police officers. You need more quality police officers. Do you have any concerns that in trying to do the right thing, to be more fair, to treat people of color the same way whites are, whether it's just everyday activity, whether it's a potential police encounter, whatever it might be, just there should be no difference, that in making any of these changes, that police officers will feel, I understand the intent of it, but you've taken too many tools away from me, and I don't feel like I can do my job as well as I've done before.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I understand that sentiment because I have lived through this before. As a Newark police officer, I was a cop in Newark before we had a federal consent decree. I lived through that process and led it where there was a lot of resistance, both internally and with community as we went through it. So I know what that looks like. However, here the situation is different. This police department has lost hundreds of officers. And the cops that are here absolutely amaze me every day with the incredible work that they do. We have cops that are performing multiple functions every day just to make up for the staffing shortages that we have. And we are seeing real results of their hard work. We're finally turning a corner around crime and violence that's been at an absolutely unacceptable level here. And I think the difference is here, cops in this town that have stayed are resilient, and they are incredibly dedicated to this community and to serving and to trying to provide policing the right way. But I think this will help provide, you know, the support and the training that they need. I think a lot of this agreement that does have certain restrictions, I know that that can be frustrating. I know that certain people can pick certain things out of this agreement and say, you know, hey, we can't do this anymore. You know, but I know the reality of the bigger picture. A lot of the stuff that is being prohibited has been prohibited here by policy already. Some things have been done here for years, but there still is other work that needs to be done. And I think in the bigger picture of things, I want people to know that we are still going to be the police, that the most important thing here is we cannot have our police department sort of fall back, especially not now while we're actually making a whole lot of progress around violence and serious crime. And I don't think that's going to be an issue here at all. I think our cops are hungry for direction and they're hungry to move forward.
You are listening to the chief of police in the city of Minneapolis, Brian O'Hara. We're talking about a unanimous vote by the city council for dramatic changes in police reform. Brian, can you back up some of that with some data, some examples? When you're talking about turning the corner and some dramatic changes, can you amplify in that so the audience understands what you're talking about? And sure. Is this all still tied to Operation Endeavor? And is Operation Endeavor still taking place even today?
Sure. The reality is year to date, I believe there have been 38 fewer victims of gun violence in the city. So that's already 38 fewer families affected by a shooting. And that's real. And the numbers across the board around violent crime are down. And we're providing those results at a staffing level that we have not seen in decades. So I think that's incredible. But I think what's most essential to doing that work that we have to be most thankful for is just the incredible amount of partnerships and collaborations that we have with our federal, state, and county partners. And yes, Operation Endeavor is a part of that. Operation Endeavor, you know, continues to go on, and it will continue to evolve and change over time. But I think the most basic idea that people need to know is that we are working collaboratively, both with law enforcement and community-based organizations, to target and to be as precise as we can to address those who are causing the most havoc and most harm in our community. And quite frankly, you know, one issue that we have, you know, that is a very serious concern continues to be stolen vehicles in the city, and this whole problem around these thefts of Kias and Hyundais that are just simply too easy to steal, and almost like a revolving door of every time officers come into contact with juveniles who are stealing these cars and then becoming involved in gun violence and more serious crime. And the reality is, you know, the way it's playing out now, there is a lack of accountability, I believe, over young people that are involved in those crimes, and it is resulting in deadly consequences for many of them.
So I want to talk accountability, and I'm lucky enough to – I'm good friends with a number of people who own businesses really in the core part of downtown Minneapolis. And they feel like that what has happened is, especially in the summer, right? I mean, who wants to be out on a disastrous night like this? But, you know, in a month from now, it might be just beautiful out in all across the state, including downtown Minneapolis. Then when it gets to 10, 10:30, 11 o'clock near the weekend and for sure on weekends, that the same individuals who are down are coming downtown to cause trouble and to create criminal activity, and that they see him, and enough of them are not arrested, and they keep coming back, and until this same group, the same core, faces charges and faces implications, you're going to have businesses who are wary about downtown, and you're going to have the public, which is wary of downtown. I work downtown. I've lived downtown. Mm-hmm. I may live downtown again in a couple of years. But I want to believe that if the same individuals are causing the same disturbances, that they shouldn't be allowed to do that on a regular basis.
Well, there is a lot of progress that has been made downtown. Particularly late at night, like as you mentioned, the number of violent crimes has decreased dramatically over time downtown, and the number of illegal guns that have been recovered, particularly at night downtown, is also significantly up. But I'm hopeful for this summer is a new plan that the city has moving forward to try and reshape a lot of what downtown looks like in the evening, to create some pedestrian zones, to sort of make it a little bit more difficult for some of these incidents to occur. I think, you know, the idea is to have more families, more people taking up space on the street, as well as making it a little bit more difficult for somebody to get into an argument and go back to a vehicle and get a gun, which is something that we see happen way too often.
Asking you to be blunt and honest on this, are there parts of this agreement where in your ideal world, those changes would not have been included, but you know this was the art of compromise, and you had to accept them?
Yes, absolutely. I debated parts of this agreement for sure, no question.
Would you be willing to share the parts you had hesitancy about?
I would prefer not to. This is a settlement agreement, and you know, now I embrace it. I did have some concerns that I have voiced and through the negotiation process came to an agreement on and settled on. I looked at the data and I said, hey, you know, how much is this really going to affect us? And looking at the bigger picture, I acknowledge that it will not have some of the public safety concern in the sense that I was initially concerned, because I think a lot of the stuff that's in there has already been adapted by Minneapolis police. And in some cases, for a couple of years, there's been a lights out program in Minneapolis where police officers, for years would stop officers with, would stop folks that have a headlight out and then give them a voucher to get the light repaired. So that type of stuff has already been happening here for years. And I don't think it's going to have I don't think any of those things are going to prevent us from doing what we need to do, which is to be precisely focused on the sort of that 1% that is out here that's pulling triggers and causing the most harm. And that's what we're going to continue to leverage our partnerships with law enforcement and community to address those folks as much as possible.
Brian, I appreciate you coming on. I hope we can do it fairly often, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Chad.
The police chief of Minneapolis, Brian O'Hara, on a significant and busy day with police reform in Minneapolis.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.